It's time for Sports Lit 101. Looking forward to talking with the author of a book that we've discussed a couple of times on the show, a wonderful read entitled Buzzy and the Bull, a GM, a clubhouse favorite, and the Dodgers' 1965 championship season. The author of the book is Ken Lezebnik, who is also responsible for writing and producing the TV series Touched by an Angel and co-writing with Garrison Keillor the screenplay for the film A Prairie Home Companion. Ken, we're so happy to have you with us this afternoon. Love the book.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really a delight to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's such a wonderful story, first about baseball, but about friendship, about luck, about those many things that can contribute to the success of a winning team.
Yeah, and at the heart of it is, of course, this, as you say, this unusual friendship between Buzzy Bavasi, who should be in the Hall of Fame, the great general manager of the Dodgers in Brooklyn in the 50s and Los Angeles in the 60s, and arguably his craziest player, Al the Bull Ferrara, who was the Bull sort of summed it all up for me when he said, you know, if there was an off-the-field Hall of Fame, I'd be in the first ballot.
Yeah. I really like that. And one of the things I also like about this book is that it tells two very different immigrant stories that I wouldn't say collide, but coalesce. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, Buzzy and Al's particular parentage and how they got here and how they grew up?
Yeah, what's fascinating, both of Italian descent, although, as you say, very different sort of pathways that ended up following. Buzzy's father, Frenchie, kind of came up the hard way in terms of the industry he built up was the delivery of newspapers in New York City. So for those of us who I think can remember this era, yeah. Newspapers and newspaper delivery in New York City used to be this huge industry. And I'm talking about now going back to the 1920s, when Frenchie pioneered the idea of, instead of each individual newspaper making deliveries to newsstands and newsstands primarily, he would coalesce all of the newspapers into one and have one offer them one service, basically a newspaper delivery service. So his trucks would gather up newspapers from, you know, at that point, dozens of newspapers and deliver them. So he ended up being quite wealthy. And Buzzy grew up really in a family that had a lot of wealth. And the Bull, by contrast, and Buzzy grew up in Scarsdale. The Bull, by contrast, grew up in Brooklyn, and his memories were very much of the streets of Brooklyn, playing stickball in the streets. It wasn't like they were impoverished, but he was certainly a guy who was always scraping. And then his mother passed away when he was very young, when he was 18, and that really left a hole in his life, which I think partly his kind of crazy behavior for many decades, I think, was that gaping hole of his mother. Interestingly, Buzzy's father died when he was very young, but their pathways ended up intersecting with the Dodgers. But they were both New Yorkers and both, you're right, sons of Italian immigrants.
Now, you're a big baseball guy, Ken, but it took Buzzy's son, Bob, to really make you aware of the story and the relationship between these two.
That's right. I became friends with Bob when he, oddly enough, married a woman I had gone to high school with in Columbia, Missouri. And I, you know, the truth of the matter is I grew up a Cardinal fan. I was from Missouri. Wasn't that familiar. The name Al the Bull Ferrara rang a very faint bell, but, you know, he was an outfielder who played sporadically until he had one season where he played most of the year, but he was never like a star. He was never a everyday player except for that one season when he actually kind of got his shot with the Dodgers, that is. And Bob, it was Bob Bavasi who let me know that we had become friends, and he said, you know, after my father passed away, the Bavasi sons, and I'm sure you know, if your listeners don't realize, the Bavasi family is kind of baseball royalty. Peter Bavasi, the eldest of the Bavasi sons, was the founder and general manager and president of the Toronto Blue Jays. Bill Bavasi served as general manager for the Seattle Mariners, later director of the Major League Scouting Bureau. And Bob owned a minor league team for many years up in Everett, Washington. when their dad, Buzzy, died, they realized, they uncovered this ongoing correspondence that Buzzy had had with the bull. And the bull was, they had actually had this long friendship, largely kept alive through emails and letters. And it was at that point that Bob said, you know, I think there's a story here that this these two people who seemingly were so different actually had this great affection and affinity for each other.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the interesting things about that was I was reading the book was how it, in most cases, I don't think a GM would have put up with the behavior. I mean, I remember Al the Bull Ferrara was the guy you got in every other pack of baseball cards when I was a kid. You know, he was one of those people's cards you got a lot. Rich and I have talked about that before. But most GMs wouldn't have put up with it, but there was something particularly compelling about, or is, because he's still alive, on time in his past tense, of Al Ferrara as a person. Do you feel like you really got a handle on what exactly that is?
Yes, yes. I think it was the thing about the bull, as he says, I will give you 100% on the field and 100% off the field. You know, the Dodgers of the 60s were a team that would win games 1-0, 2-1. They needed players with nerves of steel, players who weren't intimidated by a difficult situation. And that's Al. You know, Al was never intimidated. He had a role to play. He was a great guy off the bench because he understood his role. And he was a great contributor to a clubhouse that was very, that worked very tightly together. The other aspect of the Bulls' personality that I think appealed to Buzzy, and the Basies have talked about this a little bit, Buzzy always had a fondness for these Damon Runyon-esque characters. You know, he grew up in New York, and you can see it. Like, the Dodgers were full of these Runyon-esque figures that would follow the team, you know, down to Dodger Town for spring training. You know, Herman Levy, the eccentric former postman who would raise the flag every morning. And my favorite Herman Levy story, one spring training when they had moved to Los Angeles, but they were still having spring training in Dodger Town, Mrs. O'Malley left a lamp at Dodger Town. Herman Levy got on a Greyhound bus, yeah, rode it across the country from Florida to Los Angeles, got in a taxi, took the taxi to Dodger Stadium, where he'd never been, delivered the lamp to the O'Malley's office, and then turned and said, Mrs. O'Malley forgot this, and then turned around and went back to Florida. They were just full of these kind of, like I say, Broadway Damon Runyon-esque characters that Buzzy kind of loved, and I think that was the bull too. You know, the bull loved horse racing. He loved wagering bets on horses and on dogs. I think Buzzy just had a fond spot in his heart for these kind of larger than life characters.
He also played with a lot of players we've recently lost.
Oh, yes.
And I wonder if you could talk a little about his relationship with Sweet Lou Johnson and Ron Paranowski and yeah, some of these guys that figure so prominently in the book, because we know who they are, right? We know who those guys are.
Yes, he loved those guys. It was very sad. We actually had a little call with the Bavese brothers, and it was right after Ron Paranowski had passed away. And he loved those guys. He was great friends. And you know what? Here's the thing. This sort of says a lot about the Bull. So here you are. It's 1965. The Bull has been waiting for his chance to be a starting outfielder with the Dodgers. There's a lot of good players in front of him, but then they trade Frank Howard to Washington. He thinks it's going to be his shot. He doesn't get playing time. And then Tommy Davis goes down. He breaks his ankle. And this seemingly is the Bull's shot. But instead, Sweet Lou Johnson gets called up, and as the Bull says, for 2 years he played like Willie Mays, and he's not bitter. They were, you know, I mean, other players might have been, wow, this guy stole my opportunity. He loved Lou Johnson, and he loved all of his teammates. It's very endearing to hear him talk about his teammates, and especially the ones he lost. You know, he thought Paranowski was a great guy. I think he loved his teammates, and his teammates loved him in return.
We're talking with Ken Lezebnik about his book, Buzzy and the Bull. And Buzzy kept that relationship going even when he left the Dodgers and went to San Diego and reached out to the Bull right away, although originally not to be a player so much.
Well, he, you know what this is where Bob Bevesi has this one memory of like hanging around when they, and he was in high school at the time, when Buzzy and his kind of scouts were putting together the Padres. So there it was, an expansion team, you know, they're figuring out, you know, who's going to make this team. And the Bulls name came up and Buzzy just said, you know what, he's a good guy to have in the club. And that was the end of the conversation. He did also expect the Bull to do kind of ambassador goodwill relations work for the Padres. And the very first night that they got to San Diego, the Bull and the reporter who was supposed to, they were supposed to be their ambassador goodwill team, went out of the town, had a little too much to drink, got pulled over by the police, ends up in jail. But you know, on night one, Buzzy has to bail his goodwill ambassadors out of jail.
You know, there's something very New York about this story, though it takes place in L.A. And I say that as someone who grew up in Connecticut, that it seems that had these guys been from somewhere else, I don't know if they would have had that same magical bond. Am I completely missing it, or do you think there's something there?
I think you're absolutely right. I think there is this feeling of, you know, like the ability to kind of give people a hard time, and then it's done. It's over. This strikes me as a very New Yorker quality that, you know, in the 1965 season, as I recount in the book, the Bull has this terrible day and night where he once again ends up pulled over by a police officer for, in his case, driving when he'd never driven before in his life. And as an L.A. reporter said, the car had too much to drink. and Buzzy's like furious, and he bans the Bull to AAA. And vows he'll never come back to the Dodgers. And yet, at the end of the season, he calls the Bull back. And I think part of that is that New Yorker's ability to, all right, I did this, but now it's over. We're still friends. You know what? No matter no matter how loudly we yell at each other, underneath that is this understanding of sheer friendship.
The game has changed so much, Ken, since 1965. Even role players, journeymen like the Bull was, are making big, big money today. Many of the GMs are not guys that came up as baseball players, but are numbers guys. Could you ever have a situation today where you had that relationship between a GM and a player like Buzzy and the Bull?
You know, I ask that question of the GMs that I've gotten to know, Bill Bevesi and Peter, and sadly they say no. You know, as Bill would say, he said, you know, it's called a general manager, but it's no longer general. It's broken into more specific areas of baseball operations, baseball personnel, and certainly with the advent of agents, there's a layer now between the players and a GM that I don't think you'd ever see that kind of relationship, you know, blossom again. You know, and partly it's because Buzzy got to know the players very well because he'd negotiate directly with them. You know, it was like he'd sit across the table from them in negotiation, and he was kind of a master negotiator. And obviously that just doesn't happen anymore. You know, no player goes in and negotiates his own contract at this point.
You, you're still in touch with the Bull. You said he hasn't been feeling well of late. But I'll tell you, if he ever wants to come back and join us along with you, I know Rich will say yes to that in a heartbeat. And I really want to thank you for telling the story, because I certainly didn't know it. I like to think of myself as I was 14 in 1965. I was really into baseball. So to have read this and to learn the story has been really great. I really, really thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a delight. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ken. Ken Lezebnik, author of this wonderful read, Buzzy and the Bull, a GM, a clubhouse favorite, and the Dodgers' 1965 championship season. That's good stuff. Great book and really fun conversation as well. Bruce, what do we got coming up next week on the segment?
Next week we have Cecil Harris will be with us, who wrote Different Strokes about Serena Williams and black tennis, I guess you'd say. I think it sort of follows up on Ray Arsenault's book on Arthur Ashe. Then we have Dick Crapeau on the 28th talking about the updated version of his NHL book. Then in November, we'll talk about The Sport Marriage by Stephen Ortiz, a long study of women married to professional athletes. And then David Davis, who's been on with us twice before, has a new book called Wheels of Courage, How Paralyzed Veterans from World War II Invented Wheelchair Sports, Fought for Disability Rights, and Inspired a Nation. And David was great and was on with us about Duke Kahanamoa and about the 1908 Olympic Marathon, which started the distance running craze. So a lot of good stuff coming up.